Our Father in heaven, thank you for the liberty that we have to read the Bible in our own language, to be members of what kind of church seems best to us, openly to assemble to worship, and publicly to profess our faith, hold to our confession. Thank you for this wonderful liberty. Thank you for all that you have done in your perfect providence to make it like that for us. Please help us to learn about these things. Help us with understanding then to be able to do our part in our generation. Please continue to preserve that liberty for our kids and grandkids. In the name of Jesus, amen. Ah, the old quiz. Five questions that are too easy for bright students like you all. Number one, what year did Elizabeth become queen? What year did Elizabeth become queen? Number two, what year did England defeat the famous Spanish Armada? We know there were armadas other times also, but you know, the Spanish Armada. Speaking of the Spanish Armada, when the Spanish Armada anchored on the coast of France at Calais, what weapon did the English use to break up the Armada? What weapon did the English use to break up the Armada? And number four, how many troops did the Spanish Armada succeed landing in England? How many troops did the Spanish Armada land in England? You don't have to give that down to the single digits, of course. You know, rough figure will do. Number five, how many sons and daughters had Queen Elizabeth had by the time she died in 1603? How many sons and daughters had Queen Elizabeth had by the time she died in 1603? Okay, let's check ourselves. What year did Elizabeth become queen?
1558.
What year did England defeat the famous Spanish Armada?
1588.
What weapon did they use to break up the Armada at Calais?
Fire
ships. How many troops did the Spanish Armada succeed in landing in England?
Zero.
Zero. How many sons and daughters did Queen Elizabeth have?
Also zero.
Also zero. I guess I was on a roll there with the zero, thing. Friends, I have a few playing cards with me today. And here's how this works. If you draw a red king, you have to say the timeline entry for a Roman Catholic king. If you draw a black king, that's right. Timeline entry for Protestant king. If you draw a red queen, you give the timeline entry for Roman Catholic queen. Draw a black queen, give the timeline entry for a Protestant queen. Now, of course, I'm talking about someone who was Roman Catholic king when he became king. Okay. If you draw a number, then you give a timeline entry where the year ends in that number. You know, 1944 or whatever. And if you get a joker, then you tell the one that is not any of those. Okay, Angie, you may draw first.
1588, Spanish Armada. Armada is defeated.
Is that right, everybody?
Yes.
All right, Alvin. Show us what you got.
1526, Tyndale's complete New Testament in English is printed.
Now, those were all correct, I believe. All right, pray continue.
King Edward VI ascends the throne.
That's right, isn't it? What do you have there? Said the act of supremacy.
All the Catholics.
1509, King Henry VIII ascends the throne of England.
All right.
1558, Queen Elizabeth I ascends the throne.
Congratulations, everybody. You did it. What do you think of my little game? I thought that was fun, too. It was fun for me. All I had to do was just be a spectator. A new item for your official timeline. 1603. Guess who?
James.
King James I ascends the throne. 1603. King James I ascends the throne. Yes, that's the famous King James Version, whose last name was Version. King James Version ascends the throne. Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, chapter 10. And we want verses 16 and 17. Now, I think I let the people on the west side of the table read last time. So why don't you two here on the east side of the table read us Ecclesiastes 10, 16 and 17. You may go first, Miss Ava.
Woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child, and thy princes eat in the morning.
Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in time, for strength, and not for drunkenness.
Amen. You understand there's a, you know, recognition there that when God is blessing, then the government is sound and does what's good and reasonable. But if left to go our own way, our governments will be wasteful and foolish. The reading assignment for this coming week is in your Singe textbook, and it's chapter 13, A Picture of England 300 Years Ago. Chapter 13, A Picture of England 300 Years Ago. Very interesting reading. I think you'll enjoy it a lot. So Queen Elizabeth, the Virgin Queen, had never married, never had any children. And I read that she didn't want to name a successor because you know, her adversaries were always trying to kill her off and get Mary Queen of Scots made queen. And then after Mary Queen of Scots was executed, then there were still always the threat of people trying to get rid of Elizabeth and get their favorite. And she didn't want to name a successor, which person then would be the central figure in all plots to get rid of Elizabeth. But she did finally, very late, before her death, name as heir King James VI of Scotland. So when she died, 1603, King James VI of Scotland became King of England as King James I. So King James I and King James VI are not different people. The sixth refers to his title as King of Scotland. But we're not going to start talking about the amazing events in the reign of King James I. We're going to go back a generation and see how we got him, how we got King James, some of why he was like what he was like. So we're going to go back a generation in Scotland, and we're going to work some more on how we got James out of Mary, Queen of Scots, that we've already learned some things about. Now, James was descended from the Tudors. Remember the first Tudor king, who was that?
Henry VII.
Right, King Henry VII. And James was descended from him. But he was himself a Stuart. The Stuarts of Scotland were named for an ancestor hundreds of years before who held the office of High Steward of Scotland. And then that became the family name, Stuart, S-E-W-A-R-T, Stuart. And the House of Stuart had been kings of Scotland since 1371. The well-established House of Stuart, hereditary monarchs of Scotland. The way that that James was a Tudor was that in 1503, King James IV of Scotland married a Tudor. He married a daughter of Henry VII, sister of Henry VIII. So that's how the Stuarts ended up also being Tudors. So James was descended from King Henry VII, just like Elizabeth was. So James was a close relative of Elizabeth's, and because there had been so few surviving people among the Tudors, you know, Queen Mary didn't have any children, Elizabeth didn't have any children, King Henry VIII, for all his wives, you know, had so few children, and some had died young, because there were so few Tudors in King Henry VIII's line, then other Tudors, like James, were among the closest claimants to the English throne on the basis of being descended from the Tudors. I read that the spelling, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, was the old Scottish spelling, and Mary, that we're talking about today, Mary Queen of Scots, being so influenced by the French, changed to the French spelling, S-T-U-A-R-T, S-T-U-A-R-T, and that's what endured then. So, Mary, Queen of Scots, was the monarch of Scotland, Queen Regnant, meaning the one that actually reigns, Queen Regnant of Scotland, 1542 to 1567. 1542 to 1567. She was Queen Regnant of Scotland, 1542 to 1567. She was briefly Queen of France, which I'll talk to you about in a minute, but she was only Queen Consort. She was Queen Consort of France, part of 1559 and part of 1560. Okay, now back to her birth, 1542. Mary, Queen of Scots, was born to King James V. That's how it came to be that her son was King James VI. She was born to King James V of Scotland and Mary of Guise, G-U-I-S-E, Marie of Guise, who was from France, who was French. There's a lot of French influence in this history of Mary, Queen of Scots. And she became queen at 6 days old.
Mary, Queen of Scots?
Yes. Her father, King James V of Scotland, suffered a great defeat by the English. And a few days after that battle, he died when she was 6 days old. So she became queen, 1542, 6 days old. So, of course, the country, Scotland, was ruled actually by regents, mostly Roman Catholics, closely tied to the King of France. There were Protestants in Scotland. There was struggle between Protestant and Catholic nobles. When she was born, the Catholics were in the ascendancy, and that's who was reigning on, you know, who was ruling on her behalf when she was a baby. The next year, 1543. King Henry VIII was King of England. We've learned a lot about him, right? Can you throw yourself back into his reign? King Henry VIII proposed that Mary, Queen of Scots, be married to Prince Edward. Now, this is just when they're just little. But her Roman Catholic guardians refused. Was this before or after England was separated from the Pope?
After 1535.
It says after. So the Roman Catholics are in charge in Scotland. King Henry VIII... has separated England from the Pope. King Henry, what?
Was Mary's mother still in Scotland all this time, or was she back in France?
I think she was in Scotland. She eventually got the rule of Scotland herself. I think she was in Scotland all this time, Audrey, but I admit that I'm not sure. Now, King Henry, his proposal being refused by the Roman Catholic nobles in charge in Scotland, invaded Scotland by army. And this has come to be referred to in history as the rough wooing. The rough wooing. Who would like your infant queen to be married to my son?
Was he proposing right then when they were were still babies or when they grew up?
He was proposing that she be raised in England and married to him when they were old enough.
Okay.
Henry invaded and defeated the Scots militarily several times, but could not manage to capture her or get the Scots to capitulate. Henry did capture some Scottish nobles and made them agree to it, but the Scottish Parliament renounced that treaty. It never had effect. So King Henry invaded Scotland 1543, again 1544, again 1545. He kept invading Scotland, trying to impose this marriage of Mary, Queen of Scots, to his son Edward. But he never managed to effect it. 1547, Scotland appealed to France, calling for France to send military force to help them repel the repeated incursions by King Henry VIII. And the next year, 1548, King Henry II of France, 1548, King Henry II of France,
1548.
I've only got us to 1548. I'm sorry if I said 58. 1548. King Henry II of France agreed to help militarily if... That's how things go between kings, right? Oh yes, I'll do you this great favor, be very happy to, if. And the if was, if she would marry his son, Prince Francois or Francis. And that was agreed to by the Roman Catholics ruling Scotland.
They had something against King Henry of England.
Right. Not against France, right. So, in 1548, French military force arrived in Scotland, and Mary was shipped to France at age 5 with 4 girls, all her same age, from noble families in Scotland, from noble Roman Catholic families, all named Mary. So, Mary, Queen of Scots, and the 4 Marys, as they are known to history. Mary and the 4 Marys were shipped off to be raised in France.
Why were there 4 of those?
To provide her companionship, I suppose. So, Mary apparently... prospered, thrived in the royal court in France. What I was reading said that she became accomplished in many things. She played several instruments and spoke several languages and could ride. A similar story to Elizabeth's upbringing, right? Another testament to the success of homeschooling. She wasn't having tutors, I guess, though, right? Stuart tutors. So, here is something of a description of her. She had reddish hair. She was very pretty as a girl, and as a young adult woman, was strikingly attractive. and she was very tall, 5 feet 11 inches. Audrey, do you know how tall your tall mother is? She's not that tall. Your Mrs. So, you know, Mrs. Van Eck is tall for a woman, but not 5'11". My daughter Abigail Smith is 5'10½". I am 6 feet 0 inches. Alvin is 6 feet 0 inches. So just that much shorter than Alvin. So she was very tall for a woman, very beautiful. Now, her being very tall comes into the story, but not at this point. In 1558, she and the Prince of France were married. His name was Francis or Francois. In France, the prince who is the heir apparent is referred to as the Dauphin. Le Dauphin. So she married the Dauphin, and interestingly, since she was Queen of Scotland, this made him King of Scotland. He was only King Consort. The following year, 1559, the king died, and so Mary's husband became King Francis II. Age 15, she was age 16. So, Angie's 16. You know what Angie's like. Here's Mary, and she is Queen of France.
And
Scotland, right. Now, Scotland, you know, is a small country, remote. France is a very big country, very powerful and central in the affairs of Europe. A very rich court. So there she was, living in France, raised in France, speaking French, married to the French king. She's the Queen of France, age 16. So that's 1559. Now, let's just look away from Mary, queen, having become Queen of France with her husband, the King of France. Let's look away from them for most of 1560. She arrived in that position in 1559. Now it turns 1560. And let's look away from her and back to Scotland, okay? There is a civil war on between the Protestants and the Roman Catholics for control of France. Scotland, for control of Scotland.
Who was ruling Scotland when she was up in France?
It was nobles who were Roman Catholic and allied with France, including her mother, Mary of Guise. And there was civil war between them and Protestant nobles, and it ended up in 1560 that the Protestants gained control and were ruling Scotland. Their queen, Queen Mary, is off being Queen of France. In her absence, the Protestants managed to take over. That summer, July, you know, in Scotland, summer is only like about 3 days in the middle of July. In July, the Scottish Parliament met and agreed to reform the country's religion and declared it a Protestant nation. Now, the history of this Protestant Reformation in Scotland. The Scottish Reformation is very interesting. You're only going to get just a real quick summary here. That parliament came to be called the Reformation Parliament. That same summer of 1560, the Scottish Parliament created a committee of five men. Chairman, guess who? John Knox. All five men named John. I'm sorry, it's the six Johns, five men plus John Knox. Historically known as the six Johns. Isn't this fun? You've got the four Marys and the six Johns. And they were appointed to prepare a confession of faith, which they did. It's known as the Scots Confession. An excellent confession of faith, thoroughly Protestant. That same month, later in August, that confession was read aloud twice to the Scottish Parliament, which approved it overwhelmingly. However, guess who did not approve of it overwhelmingly? Queen Mary, off in France, when she got it, she refused to sign, so it was not enacted as law at that time. Because in that system, you know, the parliament has to pass both houses of parliament and the monarch. She would not endorse it, and so it was not enacted as law. However, she being gone, off in a foreign country, Scotland pretty much lived as if it were officially law. So that same month, a little later in August, Parliament passed several acts, and despite not having the Queen's signature, continued to live according to them. Those acts and all this time, this summer of 1560, and these things that Parliament passed are now known to history as the Scottish Reformation. They declared that all previous acts of Parliament that were not compatible with their confession, their new Scots Confession, were annulled. They repudiated the Pope's authority over them. They forbade celebration of the Mass. And they stated that there are two sacraments only, baptism and the Lord's Supper, not seven like the Roman Catholics say. And the sacraments are to be performed by Reformed ministers only, not Roman Catholic. That same year, 1560, near the end of 1560, John Knox published his first book of discipline, organizing the kirks into presbyteries, a group of congregations near enough one another that their pastors can meet and form a governing council for those congregations. Getting rid of the old episcopal system where the king appointed bishops who appointed other levels and there was a hierarchical system from the king down. They got rid of the episcopal system and introduced the Presbyterian system. This was all going on in 1560 while Mary is enjoying being Queen of France with her husband. But at the end of this year, 1560, where there's been this Scottish Reformation, her husband, King Francis II of France, died of illness. Now, she was only queen consort, right? She herself has no right to the throne of France. And when she was no longer queen consort, then rivals in France did not want her there and managed to get rid of her. 1561, she had to leave and go back to Scotland. Where instead of being warm and rich and French, it's cold and poor and Scottish. And instead of being Roman Catholic, she gets back and it's now all Protestant. I don't think so. John Knox was still extremely influential there. John Knox was against her, preached against her. She tried to have him... She had him tried for treason, but nobody would convict him. And so she had to put up with him. He didn't manage to get rid of her either. And so for several years, she was queen, but she did not wield very much power. She kept a cabinet of both Protestant and Roman Catholic lords, mostly Protestant. She got married to a cousin, a Stuart, Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley, D-A-R-N-L-E-Y. Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley, who was an English subject, came to Scotland, met her, and guess what? He was over 6 feet tall. A woman being 5'11 was very rare, you know, back then. Man being over 6 feet tall was very rare. And so there he appeared, taller than she was, and good looking and cut a dashing figure, and he was Roman Catholic. So they got married. There's testimony that she was very romantically attracted to him. So she was queen in her own right. You know, she was queen regnant. He, when he got married to her, was now king of Scotland, but only king consort. But he demanded that he become co-regnant with her, which she would not agree to and the parliament would not agree to. So that was 1565. So now she's married to Lord Darnley, who is now King of Scotland. 1566, there were Protestants conspiring to get rid of her. You know what? They should have just traded her. Elizabeth and Mary just should have swapped. No, I'm just kidding about that. But you know, we were reading about Elizabeth, Protestant monarch, and the Roman Catholics conspiring to get rid of her. Here's Mary, Roman Catholic monarch, Protestants conspiring to get rid of her, and her husband, Lord Darnley, Henry Stuart, was for a time conspiring with the Protestants against Mary, but then went back on her side. And this is the year that King James Version was born. James was born June 19th, 1566, in the middle of all of this. Okay? So there is this conflict between the king and queen, conflict between the Protestant nobles and her as Roman Catholic monarch. Now go with me to the next year, 1567. 1567, there is a man named James Hepburn. As if we needed more confusion over people's names. Here's somebody named James. James Hepburn. He is better known by his title, Earl of Bothwell. B-O-T-H. Bothwell. And Queen Mary visited James Hepburn, Earl of Bothwell, when he was injured fighting some sort of raiders. And the circumstances left people suspicious because she was pregnant again after James was born. She was soon pregnant again, and she endured some arduous travel to go and visit him when he was injured. And people started talking about whether there was some sort of affection there between the two of them. In February of 1567, the king, her husband, Lord Darnley, Henry Stuart, was murdered. The circumstances were that the house he was living in was blown up. And he was found dead in the garden or yard just outside the house. And the conclusion everyone reached was that somebody had tried to kill him by blowing him up in the house, but that somehow he had escaped the explosion, and so he had to be murdered out in the yard. So then, everyone suspected James Hepburn, Earl of Bothwell, but when he was tried in April, he was acquitted. He was not found guilty of the murder. Not that everybody agreed that he had not committed it, but he was not found guilty. And then, what do you suppose happened next? The next month, May, James Hepburn, Earl of Bothwell, and Queen Mary got married. And guess who disapproved of that? Everybody. Yes. All parties disapproved of the Earl of Bothwell and Queen Mary getting married. It looked to all like the Queen's boyfriend had blown up the king so that he could get married to her.
So that was the next month after her husband had died? Or had been murdered?
He was murdered in February. They got married in May. So there was an uprising against the two of them. By 26, they're known to history as Confederate lords. 26 Scottish lords formed a confederation. They raised an army and met her army June 15th at Carberry Hill, but there was no battle because during the parley, before the battle, her forces all deserted. Her army just all left her. She was taken prisoner, imprisoned in Lochleven Castle, L-E-V-E-N, Lochleven Castle, which is an amazing place on an island in the middle of one of those big lakes. And there in that imprisonment, July 1567, she miscarried, and it was twins. Both twins she was pregnant with died. And July 24th, just after miscarrying twins, she was forced to abdicate, to sign that she was no longer the monarch. Now, that part of the history from her visiting James Hepburn, Earl of Bothwell, through her husband, the king, Lord Darnley, being murdered and his house blown up, to Bothwell and Mary getting married. Who exactly did what wrong? Who exactly was responsible for what? To what degree the Earl of Bothwell led this thing and kind of made her follow? Or to what degree she was making this happen and using the Earl of Bothwell? What exactly there? Apparently, the historians don't know completely, and so people have different theories about who was the baddest of the bad guys here in all of this. Of course, it's a very pathetic thing to read of her having been taken prisoner, locked in a castle, and then miscarrying, and then having to renounce the throne right upon that. So it's all terrible. You know that then she eventually escaped or was allowed to escape and took refuge with Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you know, kept her in custody for the rest of her life. Not in prison, but, you know, kept her. So it was a, you know, it's a terrible thing that happened to her, but to some degree she was complicit in what was going on. So, the man she had married, who was suspected of having blown up the king, James Hepburn, Earl of Bothwell, was exiled. He went to Denmark and went insane and died several years later. Now, we're talking about events that are taking place in 1567. So, as soon as she abdicated, she was coerced to, and she abdicated, then her infant son, James, became King of Scotland. So at 13 months old, in 1567, James became King James VI of Scotland. John Knox was still living at this time. He lived 5 years after this. And in 1572, the year that Knox died, all those things that the Scottish Parliament had passed back in 1560, the Scottish Reformation, they were approved of by King James VI when he was a boy. So they became official. So then King James VI became king before he ever knew it, was king as long as he could remember. And he was king of a country where the Kirk was not an episcopal organization with him as its ruler. He grew up and reigned over a country where the Kirk was not under his control. It was a Presbyterian organization where all the congregations were ruling themselves in presbyteries, and he did not rule the church. He grew up reigning over a country with no archbishops, no bishops, not Roman Catholic, with a thoroughly Protestant confession of faith. And all of that was totally legal. It had been passed by Parliament, and he signed it. I mean, as a child, but still. So then he was reigning from 13 months old at 1567. He was born 1566. So he was reigning while Queen Elizabeth was reigning. And when she died 1603, that year, so somebody do the math for us. If he was born in 1566, in 1603, when he hadn't had his birthday yet, how old was he?
37.
So he came to the... So he ascended the throne of England March 24th, 1603, when Queen Elizabeth died, age 37, having been king of Scotland as long as he remembered, king of a country thoroughly Protestantized with no bishops, churches that he was not head of. So there's how we got, you know, very briefly, there's how we got King James. He was the son of King James the Fifth of Scotland and Mary Queen of Scots. What do you all think of that, or what would you like to ask about that? I might not know the answer, but what do you have to say about what you've heard?
Wait, wasn't he the grandson of King Henry the Fifth? Sorry, not King Henry, King James the Fifth of Scotland.
You're right, sorry. No, his... Who was his father? His father was King James V.
Henry Stuart, right?
Yeah. Pardon me, sorry. You're right. He was the grandson of James V. His father was Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley. Sorry about that. Thank you for doing that, for straightening that out. So as to Roman Catholic or Protestant, what will be expected of him when he comes to the throne of England? What kind will he be? And then, as to Episcopal or Presbyterian, what would you think that he would be? Presbyterian. That's what you would think.
Kind of. I mean, I'm sure he knew all about it, what happened to his mom, and I don't know how much he would feel, you know, these are the kind of people who did this to my mom are the people who are doing the Presbyterian Church and are the Protestants and all that.
We know how that went with Queen Mary, right, and what had happened with her mom.
Right.
It didn't make her want to be Protestant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are some wonderful things that went on during the reign of King James. This can be said about any of them. Really, really neat things that went on during the reign of King James, to which we look and give praise to God for his providence in what that has done for us. And so we can look forward to that for next time. We're done a little early, but that's all I have for you, so I guess we're done for now.